Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the On Air podcast. I was actually thinking it's episode 90, which means that we're close to 100.
I know, I'm really excited for episode 100. Like, it's not going to be anything special, probably, but I'm like, ooh, 100. It's a big number.
If anybody wants to send us any suggestions of what we could do for a 100th episode, provided nobody dies or gets married or anything like that, then yeah, send us some suggestions. We've got all of our contact details and things in the description of every episode, so you can find us there. But anyway, yeah, episode 90, isn't that strange? I thought we'd get to 9 and then give up. But no, we're still here and we're still making topics out of the strangest things. So this week, we're going to be using a story that has been in the news as a jumping off point to talk about a broader topic. So one of the big conversations over the last week or so has been Harry and Meghan, but particularly the conversation has revolved around the use of the name Sussex and the fact that they are apparently using that for their children's last name now and sort of their last name. And so we decided we would use that as a starting point to talk about surnames, which probably sounds quite dry, but I do think that, you know, there's a lot of interesting conversations as we go through about kind of where did the surname come from. So there's a lot of history in it. So yeah, we're going to talk about what surnames are used, where did they come from, and I promise you it will be really interesting. And finally, Shakespeare is going to have an answer to his question, what's in a name? Well, I'll tell you, Willy boy, we're going to answer it now.
That's it. That's what this whole thing was about. We thought, Shakespeare, solve all his questions.
Yeah, move over, Shakespeare. Anyway, this isn't the Shakespeare podcast. So shall we talk a little bit about the kind of history of surnames?
Yeah, do you want to start off with what is a surname?
I didn't actually write down what is a surname, but that would have been an important thing to me now. But it's one of those words where it's like, I know what it means, but how do you... The surname is the last name. It's usually the name that is associated with your family and is kind of passed down from generation to generation, whereas your first name is something that is more personal to you. Different cultures all kind of have different approaches to surnames. Some cultures have no surnames at all. You know, it is confusing, but generally we are speaking about European monarchies. So I think they tended to be more similar. so we can kind of do a general overview. But I'd say generally, we all had first names.
The cavemen had first names.
The cavemen, Grug and Urg and all that. And then as populations grew and people also started to settle, so we stopped becoming such a nomadic population and people started to concentrate in certain areas. Rather than just having your little tribe of people, you suddenly were living in a whole community with loads of different people from different families, and you needed a way to kind of differentiate from person to person. And so for a very long time, I think that's all surnames really were. They were more like a descriptor. So if you were talking about Edward and somebody said, oh, which Edward do you mean? You'd say Edward, John's son. And that obviously over time became Edward Johnson. But for a while, it was just sort of like, oh, that's Edward, John's son.
I always like looking at surnames now, particularly because in Britain, the sort of the son surnames aren't as common as they are in sort of Europe. So I really like looking at people's surnames and being like, at what point in your family history do people go from being like, yeah, this is Edwig's son, to being just like, we're all Edwigson now?
Well, my name, I'm not going to say my last name on the podcast, obviously, but it's an anglicised version of an Irish last name, which means descendant of this particular person.
My surname is an anglicised version of an Irish surname. Oh,
yes. There we go. Yeah. yeah. So yeah, you can see here, like, obviously, I have no idea who my ancestor was, who was connected to this person. But nowadays, if somebody said, oh, which Jessica are you talking about? They wouldn't go, oh, it's Jessica who's the descendant of that Irish guy. They wouldn't say that. But that's, you know, you can still see in my last name the kind of echoes, and obviously in Grace's, the kind of echoes of what our last name would have originally been, which was just sort of a signifier of, you know, where do you live? What is your job? Who are you connected to? How can we distinguish you from the person who is also called Edward, who lives down the road? And I think for aristocrats and sort of royals, the signifier or this distinctive quality that they would use tended to be like their territory. So, you know, they would call them all like William of Muffin Town or wherever William was from. I couldn't think of any place in the world that was real then. So Muffin Town is what we're going with. But yeah, so for a long time, that was how surnames kind of worked. And it wasn't really until kind of the earliest, the kind of 18th century in Europe, where surnames started to become not necessarily compulsory, but sort of something that you would put in a legal document. And they were sort of more formalized, I guess. But yeah, so I think when surnames started to become sort of more legal, more formalized, and less connected to kind of a specific descriptor that described you, it was something that was more ancestral. Even when that was happening with royals, they kind of just kept to the descriptor rather than sort of having a formal surname. And usually that description was territorial. So I'm thinking of, you know, even in sort of the 20th century, if you look at the example of Queen Mary, she's often still referred to as Mary of Teck because that's where she was originally the princess of. She was a princess of Teck, which is, I think, a German. They're all German, aren't they? If in doubt, say it was German when it comes to royals. And I suppose, I guess the logic behind that is that if surnames developed as a way to differentiate between people who had the same name, if you are from a group of people where there's very few of you, there's less, and you're very famous, there's less need to differentiate between you. So for example, just say the name Charlotte, that could refer to a billion different people. But if you say Princess Charlotte, everybody kind of knows who you mean. So there's less need for that sort of extra description. And I think it's a really good example, even though this is a bit earlier than a lot of surnames started to legally take hold, is kind of like Henry VIII's wives, because his first wife was Catherine of Aragon. She was a princess of Aragon. Second was Anne Boleyn. She was, you know, a commoner. I guess she was not royal. She was an aristocrat, but she wasn't royal. So she had a last name. Jane Seymour, the same, had a last name. Anne of Cleves, you've got another princess. And so she was just Anne of Cleves. Of Cleves is not her last name. It's a descriptor to help tell her apart from all the other Annes. But it was only the wives who were sort of not of royal birth who would have had a last name. So I think you can see that, you can see, that's a really good example, I think, anyway, of kind of encapsulating, even as surnames were taking hold amongst the general population, amongst the royals, they kind of, they didn't feel they needed them, I guess.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I like the the use of that Henry VIII's wife, because yeah, it's a really clear way to see it. Yeah. And also now I desperately want to go and look at all of the other sort of four wives that have got surnames and figure out what type of surname they've got. But that is not related to this podcast, but it will be something I'm doing later on.
Yeah, I don't know where Boleyn comes from. Grace frantically making notes about things she's got to research for later. But anyway, I think that's kind of continued. If you look at modern day monarchies, they don't generally have legally a surname, not to give a, you know, not a spoiler alert here, but, you know, as we go through, they might use surnames, but most of the royal households don't legally have a surname that they use. And I actually think nobody would have cared if it wasn't till we got to kind of the 19th century and you started having people, particularly royal men, marrying commoners, and then their, you know, their children eventually one day not having a prince or a princess title, and suddenly you've got somebody who needs a last name.
Yeah, I think, you know, minor spoiler, but when you sort of, I researched and I was looking at like who, what are their surnames, where do their surnames come from, most of them still have never like explicitly said exactly what the surname mm-hmm. is, and the ones who have, it was within the last like 150 years mm-hmm. bar one, but you know, spoiler. And I think, you know, it's really telling that until that point it wasn't enough of a sort of an issue mm-hmm. for anyone to be going, hang on a second, the people that are ruling our country don't have a surname.
Yeah, and it's still not really an issue that most people think about all that much.
I guarantee if I asked my class, some of them would say it was Buckingham. They'd be like, is Charles Buckingham? I'm gonna ask them tomorrow. That's it now. I'm gonna go find out what they all think, yeah, what the surname is.
You should. I love the we need to make this a regular feature. We should come up with a name for it. And I think something else to kind of talk about before we get into the specific families is this idea of a royal house. A royal house is often confused for a surname. And I can, as we go through the examples, we'll see why, because they're generally is a lot of overlap between what the name of the royal house is versus what the name of the surname that's used is. So I can understand, but they are separate things. Essentially, a royal house is like a kind of like a dynasty. It's like a succession of people from the same family who all kind of lead a particular place or a particular group. But it's really tricky because a lot of it is like in retrospect. So I think the Plantagenets, I think, is an example of like they, one king, Richard, the one with the towers, the twins in the tower, they weren't twins, the boys in the towers, that Richard, he decided that they would be the Plantagenets. And it was kind of retroactively applied to everybody who'd been part of that family before. But, you know, that's basically what is it. So it is quite difficult to describe, but that's basically what it is.
I was making my notes. I started with like, what's a surname? And then I went from there. And then within the first couple of 5 minutes I looked at, I was like, okay, I need a whole other page on what is a house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew they weren't the same thing in my head. But it wasn't until I started looking at it, I was like, it's so annoying because there's so much crossover. But at the same time, it is different. And I think particularly because surnames weren't around for so long. And, you know, we don't talk about a farmer who was alive in the 1600s, but we do talk about the Tudors and we talk about them as like Henry Tudor or Mary Tudor. So we use the house name as a surname, even though they wouldn't have done that. And it just frazzled my mind a little bit.
Yeah. Theoretically, there could have been like 10 big families and everyone just had those same 10 names for the rest of time. But people would break off and say, oh, I've decided to form a new house. But then sometimes they wouldn't be the ones who decided that they would found the new house. It would be 5 generations later that they would say, oh, we're part of this house and we've always been part of this house. But nobody else called you that. And it's so confusing. I think the best way I could think of to sort of think about the issue of a royal house versus a surname is it's more of being in a royal house. So like the House of Windsor, for example, is not to, again, spoiler alert, but everyone know that. that's the house that the British royals belong to, the House of Windsor. I think the best way to differentiate it is that a house is more like a club. It's like you're a member of a club and that club might have the same last name as you. But if the club name changed, you could probably still use the same surname. Or if you changed your surname, it wouldn't change the name of the club, if that makes sense.
It's a bit like the Kardashians.
Mm.
Are the Kardashian family, but lots of them don't have the surname Kardashian or just Kardashian because they married other people.
That is brilliant. It's the House of Kardashian. That is such a good example, because if people said the Kardashians, you would think of Kylie Jenner, and she's not a Kardashian at all. She's got no Kardashian DNA in her at all.
Yeah, see? It works.
Well, this is yeah, our pop culture references. Bang on.
So we thought we'd start our tour of European royal family surnames in Spain. Because Spain and other kind of Latin American countries, the kind of Hispanic cultures, do surnames a little bit differently than everyone else. Because rather than being patrilineal, so rather than coming down from the father, they take the surname from both parents. I was reading lots of sort of Spanish people talking about it, and they were like, well, it makes a lot of sense because if you get married or divorced, your surname doesn't change. You are just always you. I was like, you know what? 10 out of 10.
I love the Spanish system because it's like, it's so obvious.
Yeah, I like that. My parents didn't get married till I was 9, so I had a different surname than my mum. Mm. And she it was always like, you know, like things like the dentist, they'd be like, and who are you again?
Yeah.
She always brings us. She's a different person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the naming convention in Spain is to take the first, because everyone has like a kind of double surname, like the father's surname and the mother's surname, which is what I'm going to refer to them as.
Yeah.
They tended to take the first part of the father's surname and the first part of the mother's surname. However, that might sort of change into the future because that kind of naming convention order has changed a lot in the last kind of 100 years and people were kind of swapping them around. But anyway, so the Spanish royal family are in the House of Bourbon. Not related to the biscuits, sadly.
Or the drink.
They're in the House of Bourbon. So the Spanish royal family side can be seen in all the surnames. So Juan Carlos had de Bourbon in his surname from his father. Felipe has Bourbon from his father. And Leonor and Sophia have Bourbon from their father. And then the other side of the surnames are from the mothers. So Juan Carlos was Bourbon y Bourbon dos Sicilias, because his mother had the was from the Bourbon dos Sicilias family. Or Felipe is Bourbon y Grecia, because his mother was Sophia of Greece. And then Leonor and Sophia are Bourbon y Ortiz, because Letizia is Ortiz Roccasolano.
Yes, and we know that that is the last name that they use in school, de Bourbon y Ortiz. And I think it's an interesting callback to what we were talking about of kind of the territory and, you know, sort of Catherine of Aragon kind of thing, because the de is used to signify that they are from that place. So de Bourbon y de Grecia is of Bourbon and of Greece. Whereas if you look at Leonora and Sophia, they are de Bourbon y Ortiz or Ortiz. So that they don't have the de in front of their mothers, because that's just her last name. She's not from the house of, she's not from a particular place. So you can see that even though that's the last name that they use, there still is that little bit of like, you know, she is really Leonora of Bourbon is kind of her name.
It's a weird way, one of the longest running kind of houses.
So the House of Bourbon originally refers to the rule. It is referring to a place. So it does refer to the rulers of a historic province in France called the Bourbonnais. And then in 1700, King Charles II of Spain, he was on the throne of Spain. His half-sister, Maria Theresa, married Louis the 14th. He was a Bourbon. Charles II had no children. So when he was looking for somebody to take over the throne of Spain, he looked to his sister's family. And Maria Theresa and Louis the 14th had one son, also called Louis, who was expected to become the King of France. He did die before he could become the King, but that's beside the point. Louis himself had three sons. So his oldest son obviously can't be, because he's going to be King of France one day. He also died before that happened, but again, besides the point. But they had a second son, Felipe. He was chosen to become King Philip of Spain. And so Charles II named him as his heir. So when Philip came over from France over to Spain and became their king, he brought his house with him. And so from 1700 onwards, the Spanish monarchy has been the House of Bourbon. So the next family we are going to is Monaco, just a hop, skip and a jump over from Spain. I actually don't know if that's true. I have no idea how far apart they are. But yes, yeah, so we're going to Monaco. And I think there are lots of surnames in Monaco that are obvious because they're used. So Casiraghi, Ducray, Gottlieb, but they're used by people because that's the surname of their father, who was not a royal. For the royals, the sort of the princes and princesses of the family, they are Grimaldi. I've seen copies of Princess Grace's passport. So Grace Kelly, who was the Princess of Monaco, and she had a couple of passports that are publicly available. And she had one passport under the name Grace Kelly Grimaldi, but then she had another passport under the name Grace Patricia de Monaco. So it seems like, as you'll see with some of the other royal households, although they are the House of Grimaldi, there is not a lot of consistency, it seems, in the surname that they use. So the House of Grimaldi essentially descends from a powerful Genoese consul named Grimaldo. So it's kind of going back to that idea of like your last name is coming from the fact that you are a descendant of a person. So Grimaldi kind of refers to the fact that they are the descendants of Grimaldo. And one of Grimaldo's descendants, Francesco Grimaldi, captured Monaco in 1297. And from then on, there was sort of lots of to-ing and fro-ing of like who owned Monaco, and the Grimaldis were one part, and then France also said that it was theirs, and you know, there was lots of fighting about who owned Monaco. Eventually the Grimaldi family purchased Monaco in 1419, and they became the kind of undisputed owners. One of the reasons Monaco is interesting is because it is the first example of what I have called the female issue.
The female issue.
The female issue. So what I mean by the female issue is that generally throughout time, although this has changed, but you know, generally throughout time, it was the man's surname that was passed on to the children. And so what happens when you have a female monarch who's marrying somebody who's from outside of the house, And suddenly you've got this question of like, oh, well, which house passes on, which surname passes on, what do we take forward because she's a woman? Spain is not an example, even though they had a queen, Isabella. They didn't present the female issue because she married her cousin, who was also a Bourbon. So didn't matter.
Helpful.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't matter whose surname or whose house they were taking forward because it was the same. But in Monaco, you have who we talked about in our abdication episode. I think this is, I've mentioned a few people in my notes who we mentioned in our abdication episode. It's like a family reunion almost. Me and my old friends. So one of my old friends, Louise Hippolyte, Princess of Monaco, and she was a member of the House of Grimaldi. Her husband, Jacques, who she'd eventually abdicated to give the throne to her husband, he was from the House of Goyon. However, when they married in 1715, he kind of agreed to adopt the Grimaldi name. And it was, I suppose, kind of at the time, it was on condition that, he can get his title as Prince of Monaco if he accepts and sort of adopts the Grimaldi name so that the house can continue, and they don't have to think about, changing it to the House of Goyon suddenly. And then there was another princess, Princess Charlotte, in 1920. She married a guy called Pierre, who was from the House of Polignac. And so again, you have another example of it could have been that suddenly the Monaco became the House of Polignac, and they were all using Polignac as their last name. But he agreed to become a Grimaldi. And so this is, yeah, I think this is why I think Monaco was interesting, was because it's the first time we're seeing what will come up again of like, what do you do with women?
These women just causing problems
Yeah,
everywhere.
always. Yeah.
I think Monaco is so interesting because it's this the house name and surname, weirdly, has been in existence for so long compared to pretty much everyone else. Consistently, it's yeah, I think it would be very hard for it to change. Whereas some of the others are like, yeah, we've been this family for 2 years, so we think it's about time we change now. Whereas they're like, no, we were Grimaldi once and we will be Grimaldi forever. And also, it's the Princess Diaries surname, so they can't change it. Otherwise, it's going to make that a very confusing book.
I think in the film she goes by Rinaldi to kind of make it
Yeah.
slightly different, and then in the book she's, yeah, because Princess Diaries is loosely based on Monaco without a shadow of a doubt.
It very much confused me when I was like, it's a what? This is not a real place, but all these people seem to be real, so.
Yes, exactly. So I think that is something that will come up again, actually, is this kind of this long connection. And some, they don't want to give that up. If you've had the same house, it doesn't really impact anything at all. But for the royals, it's like they feel like they've been the members of this club, the Grimaldi Club, for hundreds and hundreds of years, and so they don't want to have to change that. And so they'll just be like, oh, well, we'll just everybody else in the population might take the dad's name, but we'll just get the dad to take the mum's name, and then that'll be fine. No one will know. I think compared to a lot of these of the other examples that we're talking about, the Grimaldi name is the most is one of the ones that is the most legitimate to use as a surname because it predates this, its use as a surname predates its use as a royal house. And so, if it was a surname originally, there shouldn't be any reason for them to not use Grimaldi if they need a surname.
Within Benelux, we'll start with the Be part of it, the Belgian part. Okay, so the Belgian royal family are the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which has a bit of a weird long history, but essentially it is an offshoot of the House of Saxe-Coburg, which is originally came from Saxony, so the Saxons. So it is a place name, and Gotha is also a place name, but it all got merged in. And then way back in the 1800s, Ernest Anton was the younger son of the Duke of Saxe-Coburg and Saalfeld, and also the son of a mother who came from the House of Gotha. I'm gonna say that wrong every time. Check it in my head.
I say Gotha, but people are used to us pronouncing things incorrectly in this podcast by now.
So anyway, Ernest Anton is the younger son. And I learned doing this that the younger son of a family would often set up their own branch. And that was called the cadet branch, yes, because they weren't like the main branch. And I was like, ah, cool name. Anyway, so he set up his own branch by merging together the House of Saxe-Coburg from his father and the House of Gotha from his mother to make the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. And he had three sons who went off to lead their own dynasties. And the one relevant to Belgium is Leopold I. Mm-hmm. So Leopold I was Mr. Leopold, House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. And that carried on. They were just the family of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. They went by the surname Saxe-Coburg-Gotha until 1920, when everyone was kind of a bit anti-German because of World War One, and everyone was thinking we should maybe not be so German sounding, particularly with Belgium being near France and Germany in that kind of danger zone, I'm going to describe it as. So they decided that instead of going by having the royal family have a German surname, they were going to change it to of Belgium. So they were still the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, but they just weren't going to use that as a surname. And then because they're Belgium, they have three surnames, because they have the surname in Belgian, in French, and in Flemish. So they went by Van Belgie, de Belgique, or Van Belgen.
Can I just say, prizes for the least imaginative name ever.
It's not called Belgium.
If we're going to change our name, we're going to rebrand, what should we call ourselves? Belgium.
And that kind of stayed as the status quo for almost 100 years. And then recently, in 2017, King Philippe of Belgium decided that he would change things up a bit, and only the monarch, spouse, heir, ex-monarch, and ex-monarch's spouse, so essentially the currently Philippe, Mathilde, Elizabeth, Albert, and Paula, would have the surname of Belgium, and everyone else would just go back to Saxe-Coburg, but they just got rid of the Gotha bit at this point, even though it's still their house, they just gave up. So everyone else in the family, including, you know, Philippe and Mathilde's other children, go by Saxe-Coburg or Die Saxe-Coburg or Van Saxen-Coburg. The core five go by of Belgium.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so I'm going to go back a step and just explain Leopold for a second and just say that he became Belgium. I think we talked about this in our abdication episode, but Belgium was under Dutch rule. And then in 1830, there was an uprising and Belgium became an independent nation in want of a king, I've written here, which is very, like, it's a truth universally acknowledged, a country in want of a king. What's that? Is that Pride and Prejudice?
Pride and Prejudice. Pride and
yeah, there we go. Well, my paraphrasing of Pride and Prejudice. So yeah, they needed a king. So the great powers of Europe drew up a list and eventually settled on Leopold of Saxe-Coburg for various different reasons. That's how Saxe-Coburg came over to Belgium. But yeah, I think Philippe's logic or reasoning, I think, was because in 2015, a new civil code was introduced in Belgium, which essentially meant that everybody had to have a surname. But up until that point, it had always been the father's name that carried on, if the father was known, obviously, which it was in most cases. But the father's name was always the one that carried on. And then in 2015, they said, oh, no, actually, you can have your mother's surname or your father's surname. And so suddenly you had the possibility of tons and tons of people who could have used the Van Belgie last name, because in Belgium, everyone who for a while everyone who was descended from Leopold I was a prince or princess of Belgium. They did change that to everybody who was descended from Albert II, but that's still a huge number of people. That's everybody forever who was descended from him could have used the Van Belgie last name, because even if it was their mother's, they could still use that legally under this new civil code. So that's one of the reasons, was essentially Philippe wanted to draw a clear distinction between, I guess, like the royal house and the royal family, like they've done in other families like Norway, of kind of who are the working members of the family, the core members who have a constitutional role, and who are those who are kind of like the others who have got royal blood, but they don't really do anything for us. And I think he just wanted to make sure there wasn't a billion and one, you know, Van Belgies running around making money using the name Belgium, essentially. But what is interesting, I think, is that we know that the family have used the Van Belgie or that whatever variation for different languages in sort of identity documents. But I know that Princess Elizabeth, who is heir to the throne, at Oxford University, where she's studying, she uses Elizabeth de Saxe-Coburg. So she doesn't necessarily use the last name that you would think that she would use. She uses a slightly different, and I don't know if that's so that she's the same as her siblings. I don't know if it's because in the UK we might think Saxe-Coburg is just some general rich European name, whereas if your last name is Belgium, we might, and you know that there's a Belgian princess, somebody's like, "Oh, I wonder which one of the people in this class is the Belgian princess," and then one of them the last name is Belgium, that you're gonna know. I don't know why she uses that, but it is an example of sort of how fluid and flexible these rules can be.
Yeah, I think because in the military, we've seen obviously Elizabeth and Gabriel work, sort of training in the military, and Elizabeth is de Belgium, van Belgie, and Gabriel is de Saxe-Coburg. So they do delineate. I imagine it's probably that of Belgium's like the royal ones, who she uses that when she does royal things like the
Yeah,
military,
maybe. Yeah.
but Saxe-Coburg's like the family surname.
Well, maybe that's why. We don't know the specific reasoning, but it just shows that, Elizabeth, it wasn't that long ago that she was in the military. So she's using different surnames quite close together, depending on the context. Yes, so we are now moving on to the Netherlands, the Ne of Benelux. And so surnames are very, very important to Dutch titles. And I didn't know this before this researching for this episode. In the Netherlands, in order to inherit your father's title, you also have to have the same last name. So actually, this is one of the examples where we very literally know, like in some of these, we're kind of, this is the last name that they could use, maybe, but they don't always. And sometimes they use this. Whereas in the Netherlands, there are examples of, Queen Beatrix very clearly going on the record and saying, this person's last name is this, with no ambiguity. So, for example, her sons, Constantine and Friso, when they married, she confirmed their surnames in a decree. And we know that their surname is Van Orange-Nassau van Amsburg. In practice, them, most of the family tend to use Van Orange or Van Orange-Nassau. And there are examples that we can see. So, like Princess Alexia, when she was at school in Wales, her sort of graduation certificate has Alexia van Orange-Nassau. We know that, like, professionally, you've got, Eloise, Countess Eloise is an influencer, or Princess Mabel, who is sort of a charity worker and campaigner. They both use Van Orange. So, we know the full name for some of the members of the house, but generally the most common thing you'll see is Van Orange-Nassau.
It was really, when I was Googling them, like I'd Google, say, Princess Mabel, and it would be like, Mabel, what was this? Her official name is this. She goes by this. And I was like, okay, can you just pick one thing to go by, please? Because it's really confusing. Yeah, and some of them do like Van Orange, like the anglicized way with orange and the G, and other ones do it with the J, which I assume is how they spell orange in Dutch. And there is no consensus on how they decide to use that or what Wikipedia decided to use. Very confusing.
Yeah, I know. They don't, which is strange because we were talking about how surnames are meant to distinguish people from one another. Whereas actually you use a different surname every time you go anywhere. Maybe surnames aren't actually for royals after all. Maybe the fact that they didn't pick them up for so long was sensible because they can't seem to work it
They just
out.
don't understand how to use
No,
them.
they really don't. They've got no idea. But broadly speaking, the how in terms of the how the House of Orange-Nassau came to be in the Netherlands, I hate the Nassaus, can I just say, because there's like 900 different branches of the Nassau family. I've looked at them before for other things, and I hate it. I'm so sorry to the House of Nassau, but why do you have to make things so confusing? Well, I think I'm the only person in the world who's ever ranted about the House of Nassau.
I suppose back in the day, there were probably lots of people ranting about them, like, oh,
Probably.
not them again.
Yeah. But they are, so Orange Nassau is essentially a branch of Nassau. And so Grace mentioned earlier this concept of cadet branches. Sometimes they'll eventually sort of split off into their own little branch and make up their own little house, but it's sort of part of the bigger house. So they're part of the House of Nassau, which was founded in the 12th century in Germany. In 1255, the Nassau possessions were split between two sons, Walram, remember that name, and Otto. And Otto's descendants eventually settled in the Netherlands. So they were members of the House of Nassau. And they kind of became the stadtholder, which is the sort of hereditary position that wasn't like king, but kind of was like a deputy king who looked after the Netherlands. And one of those, William the Silent, great name, he became Prince of Orange as well, as being a member of the House of Nassau and having this Dutch title. Orange is a place in France. The Prince of Orange is a French title. And his maternal cousin died without having children, so he left the title in his will to William. And so William had this new Orange title, so he decided to create his own little branch. And so he kept the Nassau name, but he also added Orange to it, so it became the House of Orange Nassau. But we have the second example of the female issue.
These women, again, these women. Causing problems.
And in, oh, it's a doozy in the Netherlands, because they had 120 years of uninterrupted queens reigning on the throne.
Oh, yeah, I did quite like when I was skewed. I was like, yeah, and then the male line died out. And I was like, but we're so far in the past. Yeah. How can we get to the present day?
Yeah. Yeah, so each time they kind of married, they basically just went, oh, yeah, but we're going to stay as the House of Orange Nassau. We kind of, we like that. And I think this is another example of, you know, like we talked about in Monaco, of the fact that one of the reasons they wanted to stay Grimaldi was because they'd had this connection going back to the late 13th century. I think in the Netherlands, the connection doesn't go back as far, but orange is the national colour of the Netherlands because of this connection to the House of Orange. Orange is almost like, it's like an emblem of the country. And so to kind of, in a way, it sounds silly because it's just a colour, it's just a name, but to give up the House of Orange would kind of be like a changing Dutch identity in a way.
Yeah, I think, oddly, Orange and like the of Orange title, surname thing, being linked to the Dutch royal family is possibly the one that I knew first. Mm-hmm. Like when I was younger, growing up in England, the one I learned about first was the fact that the Dutch royal family were of Orange. And I think that's possibly because of William of Orange.
Yeah, we had an Orange monarch for a bit.
our prior Orange monarch. But I felt like that was, I knew that from a really, really young age, long before I knew what the British royal family's surname was. Maybe because they just came later in my like Kings and Queens books when I was younger. So I didn't get to them as early. But I think they are so linked with that title. It would feel really odd if suddenly they were just like, oh yeah, and now we're the Smiths, the Von Smiths. So.
But they did integrate. So I mentioned earlier that the full name for like Constantine and Friso's families is, even though they don't use it, is Van Orange Nassau von Amsberg. And von Amsberg is the last name or the house name of Beatrix's husband, Klaus. He was Klaus von Amsberg. And I think it's a good example of how kind of the last name and the house name can be very, very similar, but they're not necessarily exactly the same. So legally, their last name might be von Orange Nassau von Amsberg, but the house name is still Orange Nassau. So this is, you know, because I think up until now, people might be like, you said that the house name and the surname are different. like they are, I promise.
Yeah, I think even like when you go sort of back a generation to Constantine and Friso and William Alexander's cousins, like they're Van Orange Nassau, Van Lippe Biesterfeld, because that was Prince Bernard's surname. When I was going through it, I kind of forgot he existed. And I was like, where has this random surname come from? Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're just going back a generation here.
Yeah.
But they've all, it's like they all kept the key part. And then we're just like, we'll shove in the dad as well.
Yeah.
The Luxembourg Grand Ducal family are also part of that sort of House of Nassau. They've all got so many different names, and I hated it with a burning passion, trying to figure out what their names are, because they also keep changing them.
I'm glad that you hate the Nassaus as well. See, they're terrible, aren't they?
They are. Every time I sort of got a so I was like, okay, this is what their surname is. Like, the next line down, I'd be like, until this time, when it changed again, and then changed again, and then we changed it a third time. Anyway, so in Luxembourg, we'll start with the surnames because that's the easier part of it. In 1987, on the 28th of July, helpfully they did all this legally, so it's all written down somewhere, The members of the dynasty, with the Nassau dynasty, assumed the surname Dinasau or Zunasau, depending on whether they're speaking Luxembourg or German, which was done because prior to that point, the surname of members of the Luxembourg royal family was Dinasau Willeberg Bourbon Palmer, which is really long and seemed unnecessary because Grand Duchess Charlotte of Luxembourg, she came up before, is obviously from the House of Nassau-Willeberg, the House of Luxembourg, the house that was the House of the Netherlands once upon a time, the Nassau part of the Orange Nassau. And Felix was Bourbon Palmer, which was Portuguese. They didn't exist anymore. Sorry, Felix, you don't get to count in this anymore. So they just ditched that. And then they cut it down to Dinasau because that was just easier. And then in 1995, on 21st September, they said, no, that's even more confusing. Why be of Nassau? Let's just be Nassau. Let's just have a normal surname. And then in 2006, they went, no, actually, we want to be different. So we'll go back to being Dinasau. And then in 2012, they thought we might want a German version of that. So we could be Zunasau as well. And we can also be Bourbon Palmers. So they've kind of gone back to where they were originally, apart from the Willeberg. But which they just ditched and didn't want that one back. But essentially, their current surname is, they use Dinasau. And then just to be confusing, the really key ones, so the Grand Duke and Grand Duchess, the Hereditary Grand Duke and Hereditary Grand Duchess, and the children of the Grand Duke, Grand Duchess, and the Hereditary Grand Ducal couple are can use the surname of Luxembourg.
Yes, I know. They don't make it easy, do they? I found a story. I don't know if it was actually like a satirical piece or if it really happened, but the story said, because it was in Luxembourgish, but the story said that there was like somebody doing sort of a statistics thing. It sounded a bit like a census, but not quite as, you know, formal as a census. And they went around and they asked Henri, the Grand Duke, his last name. And he said, oh, I don't know. De Luxembourg, and they put that in. They're like, no, nothing's coming up. So he didn't really know what his last name was. And there are examples. So, like, he was a witness at King Philippe and Queen Mathilde of Belgium's wedding, and he signed the documents as Henri de Luxembourg. So, there, you know, just to confuse it, they sort of add in this extra thing. And I think it's slightly ambiguous as to whether that is a last name or whether it's like more of an identifier. Dinasau is definitely a last name because they said in the decrees it is a last name, but just because they use something as a last name if they need one, you know, it's ambiguous, it's weird, it's confusing.
Yeah, it was really I hated it because they just kept going back to what they were before. But I think the essence was the surname can now is either Dinasau or Zunasau depending whether speaking Luxembourgish or German. And then of Luxembourg is like a title for the key ones.
Yeah. Thank you, Grace, for giving me the task of talking about the Nassaus again. As I talked about, we talked about the House of Nassau being founded and these two sons, Otto and Walram. And I asked you to remember Walram because Otto settled in the Netherlands and his descendants became big there. Walram focused mostly on sort of German territory and Luxembourg's kind of more tied up with that. Yeah, the Nassaus are very confusing, but basically William III was King of the Netherlands and Grand Duke of Luxembourg in a personal union. And when he died in 1890, Wilhelmina took over in the Netherlands. But according to, she couldn't be the Grand Duchess of Luxembourg because she was a woman. Oh, pesky women again. And the law in Luxembourg, which was a separate country, said that they couldn't have a female on the throne at the time. So under this agreement that had happened between Otto's descendants and Walram's descendants, they decided what would happen in this situation. And so basically it passed from Wilhelmina to a guy called Adolf, who was part of the other line. So Wilhelmina was part of the Orange Nassau line, and Adolf was part of the Nassau-Weilburg, or however you pronounce that, line. This is a fun fact, which is one of my favorite facts about royals. So they were like third cousins, Adolf and William III, through the female line. But the inheritance was through the male line. And through the male line, they were 17th cousins once removed, which is the largest distance between two successive monarchs in terms of lineage. Anyway, but yeah, at some point, they started calling themselves like if you go onto the Luxembourg royal family's website now, they say they are from the House of Luxembourg Nassau. And I have no idea why or when they changed and stopped being Nassau, because they are really still the House of Nassau-Weilburg. But they just seem to have changed their name.
Yeah, they surely just were like, I feel like they must have just fallen out with a Wilburg relative and were like, we are cutting you from history. Yeah. You are not part of us anymore.
Yeah, because there was between when they stopped, like if you look on the Wikipedia page, I think it's Henri who's the first one who's put under the name Luxembourg Nassau instead of Nassau-Weilburg. But nothing changed. So they just seem to change the name, but without having any reason, like the Brits or the Belgians of like, you know, everyone hated the Germans. They just changed it for fun. It seems like nobody really hated the Germans in, you know, the 90s. So now it's time for Scandinavia. We're getting further north. And first up, we've got Sweden. And Sweden is the House of Bernadotte. That's it. Moved on. No.
Moving on.
Yes, yeah, so the House of Bernadotte, it was established in 1818 when a French soldier, Jean-Baptiste Bernadotte, was chosen to be the King of Sweden. And I think we talked about this in previous episodes, but Charles the 13th of Sweden was the king. He was childless, so he needed to find a successor. And most of the time they pick, like, you know, some random Danish prince or some random German prince who's not expected to inherit much. So they give it to him instead. Sweden went very rogue and chose Jean, who was well-liked in Sweden because of his conduct during the war, but he was also an ally of Napoleon. So he was, his last name was Bernadotte. This is like the Grimaldi family in that it was a last name before it became a royal house. It sort of predates that. So when he became king, he kept the Bernadotte name. He didn't pick like a random Swedish one and decide that would be the family's name. And so to this day, the very Swedish members of the royal family have a French last name, which is an interesting little quirk. But there was a massive freak out. Well, okay, that might be an exaggeration. There was a brief panic when Victoria married Prince Daniel. Because people were thinking, oh, well, you know, Sweden hadn't had a queen who'd, like, since the Bernadotte dynasty had started. So this was a new question of, like, oh, are we going to lose the Bernadottes? Is it going to be the House of Westerling, which has never existed before? You know, Daniel wasn't an aristocrat. So how does this work? Very quickly, it was sort of all dispelled because Daniel, being the modern man he is, took Bernadotte as his legal last name.
Love that for him.
Love that.
It's a modern man.
We love an ally. yeah. So, So I think that's basically the history. They could, as I say, they could use the Bernadotte name as a surname very legitimately because it was a surname before it was a royal house. Sweden is a good example because there are people who are within the family, who are family members, who are not prince and princess, who do use the name Bernadotte as a last name in sort of day-to-day life. So, an example might be, actually, interestingly, Princess Estelle, Victoria and Daniel's daughter, her namesake, Countess Estelle, married Count Folk Bernadotte. And so their last name is Folk, and Estelle's last name was Bernadotte. In the Swedish tax agency, which every person in Sweden has to be registered in, Prince Nicholas is listed with the last name Bernadotte. But there are variations. We know that Princess Leonor, who is the eldest child of Princess Madeleine, the youngest child of the king, so quite far down the list of people in terms of the line of succession, she was born in the United States and she has a US passport. So she's going to need a last name like everybody else in the United States. And so the last name that she uses is actually a double-barreled one of her mother and father. She uses Bernadotte O'Neill, even though in Sweden you can't have a double-barreled last name. But it's her US passport, so she uses Bernadotte O'Neill. And we also know that in the tax agency, people like Victoria and Estelle, people who were born royals, who have titles, who are in that main line, they actually have an asterisk instead of a last name.
I saw that and I was like,
yeah,
I feel like that's cheating on some level. You're like,
It is cheating. Everyone in Sweden legally has to have a surname, but they bend the rules for the royal family. And this is why I was saying, like, most people don't care about the surnames, but there have been articles in the Swedish press that have complained about the fact that Victoria and Estelle get special treatment and don't have to put a last name in. I think it's a bit overblown because, like, they don't pay different levels of tax, because they have an asterisk in their last name instead of Bernadotte, you know. But it does just show as well that, like, even in countries where there is a legal requirement that you have a surname, that doesn't mean that the royals are going to legally have a surname. They can call up. I'm sure that they could call up the prime minister and be like, hey, could you fill in this form in the tax agency? He'd be like, that's a way below my pay grade, but sure. And they'd get that done for them, you know. So, but I think, so technically you could say that Victoria's last name is asterisk. It's the symbol, like Prince.
I think we should change it to that. Yeah. Just yeah.
The
star.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I like to hope that's how they registered Estelle at school, like Estelle, yeah. Star.
Yeah. Well, Estelle means star, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Her star, star. That's it now. Like Moon Moon.
Oh dear.
I hope people know that, the Moon Moon reference. If not, you can Google it and find out the history of the Moon Moon meme. Anyway.
Moon Moon and Star Star.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so Denmark. Okay, so technically, they are the House of Glücksborg, which is the Danish version of Glücksberg, which is the shortened version of Schleswig-Holstein-Sonderburg-Glücksberg.
Is it Glücksberg? Glücksberg. I've been saying Glücksberg this whole time, but I love Glücksberg. I'm going to use that.
It should be Glücksberg. It sounds more fun.
I don't know any. I've never done any German, so no. It could be.
Where was I? Yes, sorry. They are. They are the House of Glücksberg or Glücksberg, depending on how cool you want to be. And then they had a man issue for once because. Yeah. Queen Margrethe's husband, Prince Henrik, was not very happy about not having children with his name and grandchildren with his name and not carrying on his line. So he was Count Honoré de Laborde de Montpezat, or when he turned up in Denmark, Henrik. So Margrethe did a bit of surname changing and changed it so that the descendants or the male line descendants of Queen Margrethe have the surname Glücksberg de Montpezat.
The House of, I'm going to be uncool and say Glücksberg, because, so I don't know which one of us is right, but hopefully between the two of us we'll have covered it. It's a branch of the House of Oldenburg, so technically the House of Oldenburg has reigned over Denmark since the 14th century, since the 15th century. So that's another, this is another example of one of those ones where they don't want to lose that connection because it's continuous House of Oldenburg for a very long time. The last person who was an actual Oldenburg, like from the main line, was King Frederick VII. He had no children. So yet again, he chose a random person. All these people talking about, you know, the importance of blood to a monarchy. It's never been important until like the last 100 years. Because in 1852, he chose his distant relative, Prince Christian of Glücksberg, as his heir. So, I mean, the thing I think is interesting about Denmark is that technically they could use Glücksberg, but they don't. Most royal families do not have a last name, even though we've been talking about like ones that they use in practice. Legally, they don't have a last name. And in Denmark, they very much like don't have a last name. There have been last names that they have used. Frederick, we know, used the last name Henriksen at university. Nikolai caused a bit of a stir, I remember, because he used his stepfather's last name, Jorgensen, as his last name on social media. And so everyone was like, oh my God, he hates his dad. There's like I mentioned, the Swedish tax agency, there's a sort of similar thing in Denmark called the Central Person Register, which everybody in Denmark has to be registered on. And since the change where Nikolai and his siblings lost their princely titles, they seem to have been registered with the last name Til Danmark, which is to Denmark. It used to just be blank because they didn't have a last name. Even though they had this House of Glücksberg, they did not use it as a last name. But now it seems to be Til Danmark.
Surely that just makes it easier to know what you're putting on your passport.
Yeah, exactly. Because that was his... Well, okay, yes. This is a little bit of a defense, actually. And maybe a little bit of like... you know, humility from me, because people think I'm arrogant and I'm going to be really humble right now and be like, actually, you know what? I've rethought something, because, you know, I mentioned the Bernadotte name, and in Sweden, the members of the royal house, they could put in the surname Bernadotte in their tax agency records. They don't. They put an asterisk. So they clearly consider themselves to not have a surname even though they have this option. But then there's members of the family who don't have prince and princess titles who do use Bernadotte as a last name. So we know that it can be used as a last name. Whereas in Denmark, as you mentioned, they created this title of Count and Countess of Rosenborg. So there's actually somebody who is like King Frederick's fourth cousin who is a Count of Rosenborg. And is not like an order, which in, you know, most royal families, once you get to that degree of separation, they've got a normal name. And so they have to have a last name. But these people are the Counts and Countesses of Rosenborg. So they don't have to have a last name because they've got that title. And then Margrethe created the Count of Monpezat title. And so for all of her and Henrik's descendants, it's going to operate in exactly the same way. So for the rest of forever, we're going to have Counts and Countesses of Monpezat, and all the women will marry men and take their last name. So the Danes have really done everything in their power to not think about what their surname could be. And so my apology is to King Constantine of Greece. Because the Greeks were members of the House of Glücksberg as well. And in our episode, Mr. Kensington, we kind of made fun of Constantine because he was asked to pick a, he was told in, you know, Greek people, we now have to have surnames. So you have to have a surname if you want to be a Greek citizen. And he was like, but I don't have a surname. I can't use a surname. And they said, well, what about Glücksberg? And he was like, oh, well, Glücksberg is a place. I can't possibly use that as a surname. And I do think that was overly dramatic, because if you really wanted to have a citizenship of Greece, you could use Glücksberg as a surname. But it just seems like the House of Glücksberg has this like weird cultural thing that's part of being in the house, where like the concept of a last name just is so beyond anything they could think about.
I can't possibly use the surname. It was horrible. That's what normal people have.
Exactly. I think it's just like they just have resisted it for so long that like for Constantine, there is really nobody in his family who has ever used a surname. And so I do empathize with him a little bit more now. I still think it was overly dramatic, but I empathize with it because, it seems like everybody in the sort of extended Danish family, which he is a member of, is sort of like just flabbergasted by the concept of surnames because they just don't use them.
Yeah, I was reading an interview with Crown Prince Pavlos, and he was like, I'm not using Glücksberg. I'm not. I am of Greece. That is my name. I am of Greece. What can you do? I will always be of Greece. And I'm like, you have never been of Greece.
Yeah, no. This is where, you know, this is backing me up when I said earlier that surnames in the house might be the same, but they are not legally the same thing. And I think this is, Denmark is proving my point, because they are the House of Glücksberg, but you will not find a Danish person in the royal family who goes by Glücksberg as their last name. So now we move over to our last Scandinavian monarchy, Norway. Guess where they're from? Glücksberg! Glücksberg!
Glücksberg.
Glücksberg. Yeah, so they are also from the House of Glücksberg. And so a brief history of how that came to be in Norway. So Norway was in sort of ruled over by Sweden. And then they got independence in 1905. And yet again, we have another example of suddenly a monarchy doesn't have a monarch. And so they decide to pick somebody. And they picked Prince Carl, who was a junior Danish prince. He, because he was from the Danish house, as we've just explained, he was a member of the House of Glücksberg. So when he came over, he started off the Glücksberg dynasty in Norway. And I have to say, they're less annoying, but the Norwegians, it is a Glücksberg thing, I am sure of it. The Norwegians also seem incredibly confused by the concept of a surname.
Yeah, my notes on Norway were really short because I was like, they don't seem to have anything anywhere.
Yeah, I think some of these, like, you know, I've given examples of, you know, what people use on, like, Prince Louis of Luxembourg uses de Nassau on his LinkedIn page. So we know that that's the last name he uses there. It's not the same as his legal last name, as what, you know, what he would put on a marriage certificate or on his credit card. You know, that's, they're not the same thing, but we know that that's the last name that he uses. So I've really sort of scraped the bottom of the barrel for Norway. So we know, for example, that Ingrid Alexandra had a graduation ceremony. It's like a party that all of the graduates have from school, and they have to have a name, their last name, embroidered on the side of their outfit that they're wearing. And so she chose Hoiby, which is her mother's maiden name. That doesn't mean that's her last, she ever uses that in any other context, or that she considers that her last name. It could just be that she didn't have, you know, she wanted to put something down like everybody else. In the military, she's just referred to as Recruit Alexandra, The only person I know who used Glucksberg was Martha Louise, who used it as a last name when she was a student. One of my favourite stories is that Crown Prince Haakon said that when he's doing online shopping, he uses the last name Magnus, which is his middle name, or his double part of the last part of his first name.
Yeah, I do. I like to assume the fact that they kept double naming their children so they could just have something to put in the surname boxes.
But yeah, no, I think Norway, I think, opens the door to the Glucksbergs having to compromise. Because in Denmark, they've created these titles so that basically they don't have to think about, I don't think this is the reason, but they created these titles so that nobody has to think about it forever. And I think that in Norway, they don't have an equivalent. They don't have like a Count of Montpezat that they give to everybody. And so in Norway, the Glucksbergs, as I said, took over only in 1905. So actually, since the house was founded, in, or the Norwegian branch of the house was founded, there has never been a monarch with a brother.
That's such a weird fact. I love it.
It isn't a weird fact. And the reason it's interesting is because obviously if they had sisters, the sisters would marry somebody else and then their husband's last name would be the one that was important here. If they have a brother, then he would still be a prince and he would marry somebody and they would become a princess. But then eventually their descendants will stop being prince and princess. And so we haven't actually had to know in Norway what somebody's last name would be, because they all either have their father's last name if their mother was the royal, or they just don't have one that they use because they're royal and that's fine. So we actually will probably have to find out the answer to this. They will have to think about this in the future in a way that the Danes don't have to, but it probably won't be until Sverre Magnus has a child, maybe even a grandchild. So I could be like 70 before we actually find out what the Norwegians decide to use as a surname.
Yeah, when we do our 4,000th episode in 40 years, we'll be discussing the hot topic. So, to Britain, what the whole reason we're doing this. Yep. Going back to Ernest Anton from earlier, back when I was talking about Belgium. Mr. Ernest Anton, who was in the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, had three sons. We spoke about Leopold I, who became King of Belgium. His middle son, Ferdinand, became the forerunner of the monarchies of Bulgaria and Portugal. And his other son was Albert, who would go on to marry Princess Victoria, who then became Queen Victoria. So when Queen Victoria died, her son, Edward VII, said, I'm going to take my dad's surname. We will no longer be the House of Hanover, the German name. We will now be this other German name, the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. He died 9 years later, so George V took over. He was in the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. And then in 1917, before Belgium did, they panicked and went, hang on, we've got a German surname and we're fighting Germany in the war. So he decided to change the house name to a building that he quite liked, I assume, was the thought process. He went for the House of Windsor, because Windsor is Windsor Castle. It was the family home. It's very British sounding, I think, was the actual logic behind it. It was the most British sounding castle they owned, was Windsor, so they went for that. And on the 17th of July, 1917, the Privy Council meeting said that the male line descendants of Queen Victoria would be part of the House of Windsor and have the surname Windsor. And I have to say thank you to the British royal family for being really specific in what you are calling yourselves throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
And it stayed like that until Queen Elizabeth II rocked up. So she was an example of the woman problem, because she was Elizabeth Windsor. And she got married before she became queen. And she was marrying Prince Philip of Glucksberg. He took the surname of Louis Mountbatten. So he became Philip Mountbatten. So they were having a bit of a worry behind the scenes, because they were like, do we stick with Windsor, which is what the Privy Council said? Philip's thinking, hang on a sec, I know this has only been my surname for 5 minutes, but I would really like to pass it on, please. So there were all these discussions going on. They kind of didn't really settle it. Elizabeth became queen in 1952 and confirmed that it would still be the House of Windsor. She was still Elizabeth Windsor. He was Philip Mountbatten. Philip, I assume, was moaning about this behind the scenes for several years. And in 1960, they had another Privy Council meeting where they said that all male line descendants of Prince Philip, not of Queen Victoria or Queen Elizabeth, but of Prince Philip, would have the surname Mountbatten Windsor, but would be part of the House of Windsor to distinguish between the descendants of Queen Victoria and the descendants of Phil and Liz.
Excellent summary. Yeah, I think it's interesting that you've got two examples of the female problem, and one of those they chose to, well, just take the man's name, and in other ones they chose to, in Elizabeth's case, they chose to keep the name that was connected. It reflects the fact that unlike the Netherlands, or Monaco, in the UK, we'd had the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha for like 10 minutes. And we hadn't had the House of Hanover for very long. I mentioned we had an Orange for a bit. We had Tudors, we had Stuarts, we had loads of different people. So we didn't really have any particular ties. Whereas I think now we do have ties to Windsor. The Mountbatten-Windsor one, it's interesting because they sort of acknowledged the Queen acknowledged the challenge that I mentioned and the reason that we've had to start talking about surnames in the sort of statement, because she said that the Mountbatten-Windsor surname could be used by people who were not prince and princess. And so, you know, in other words, they needed a last name. And so obviously there are examples of princes and princesses using the Mountbatten-Windsor surname in official documents and things like that. But it was specifically designed to kind of recognize that the royals themselves do not legally have a surname. And so we have to kind of create one for those who do need it.
From just generally living in the UK, I think the distinguishing line between Windsor and Mountbatten-Windsor is sort of so thin for most people. Like, I'm sure most people know the British royal family, the House of Windsor, but you would definitely get someone go, oh no, they're the Mountbatten-Windsors. I'm sorry, no, they're the Windsors. That's Windsor. And I think that's an argument I've heard. People being like, no, it's the Windsors. No, it's the Mountbatten-Windsors. And they actually, they haven't used Mountbatten-Windsor that we've like physically seen very often, because the children of the descendants of the Queen and Prince Philip, who would be Mountbatten-Windsors, haven't had like much opportunity to use it.
Yeah.
Like, we know Princess Anne and Prince Andrew used it on their wedding certificates. We know that technically Lady Louise is Lady Louise Mountbatten-Windsor, even though she goes by Lady Louise of Windsor most of the time. But everyone else was either a prince or a princess at birth, or they were the child of a daughter, so they took their father's surname, like Zara and Philip, or Sienna or Ernest. They've all taken their father's surname. So even though that's, the surname is there, we know it. And she was, honestly, fair play to her, Queen Elizabeth, quite on it with just sorting out this issue in advance. They've not really had to use it yet. Just kind of hovering there till they do.
You know, there's more people who have the last name Windsor than Mountbatten-Windsor, even though they created this whole thing just to placate Philip and then nobody uses it. However, I would say when it comes, we've got a clear surname, but when it gets to the princes and the princesses, it is a little bit more ambiguous.
William and Harry, when they grew up, were officially, could have used Mountbatten-Windsor as their surname. And I think people expected them to, judging by the BBC News articles I was reading from the early 1980s, but they didn't. They went to school as Harry and William Wells, because they used their father's title as their surname. And that has continued for everyone ever since. So we had William and Harry Wells, Beatrice and Eugenie York, George, Charlotte and Louis Cambridge. So that's just to confuse things.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, it shows that sort of flexibility of, like, even though the Queen said you can use this surname, it was really intended for people who are not prince and princess. So they can use it as a prince and princess, and they have, but it's not like that is legally their name because the Queen said it was. Which I think that leads us back to our beginning.
Which is, can they, Harry and Meghan, change the name of their children?
Yeah.
So Harry and Meghan are legally the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. And they rebooted their website to be sussex.com and kind of told the press that their children would therefore be going by Archie Sussex and Lilibet Sussex rather than Master Archie Mountbatten-Windsor and Miss Lilibet Mountbatten-Windsor. And obviously everyone kicked up a fuss because they do anytime Harry and Meghan breathe. However, it was coming off the bat of last year them confirming that they were Prince and Princess Archie, Prince Archie and Princess Lily, therefore they don't need a surname.
So it's become a massive talking point about like this use of the last name Sussex, and there are people who are absolutely outraged by it and how disgraceful it is. And then people being like, no, it's legally their surname, so they have to use it. It's legal and blah. And just, I think people are making it into a conversation that it's not. It's much more simple than people are trying to make it. And it's much less complicated and much less dramatic than people are trying to make it. If somebody says, well, Sussex is legally their surname, that's not right because Sussex is not legally their surname. And actually, through this research, I found out that in the UK, we aren't actually legally required to have a surname.
I'm going to get rid of my surname. I should give it Grace.
Exactly, you could do. So actually, the royals aren't doing anything, unlike in Sweden, where you're supposed to legally have a surname and they don't. In the UK, nobody's doing anything wrong because you don't have to have one. But so yeah, the Sussex is not legally their surname. However, it's also not legally not their surname. It's not a surname that they can't use. They have to have a surname of some description because they are living in a country that doesn't have a monarchy. And Sussex is as good as anything else. It follows the exact same pattern that the Wales children use, which William and Harry grew up using, which people seem to be conveniently forgetting. They are the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. And people can be upset about that if they want to be. I can't stop them. It's up to them. But they are.
If you were not up in arms about George being George Cambridge, you can't be up in arms about Archie being Archie Sussex, because it's exactly the same situation.
Yeah, exactly. And people are making it into like an emblem of this conversation about them using the royal family name. But like, they're not using the royal family name, they're using their name. I don't want them to be, I don't think there's any need for them to be stripped of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex title. But if it did ever happen, I would think it would be so funny if they legally changed their last name to Sussex anyway. They were given this title, and there was no guarantee. The Queen didn't say you'll get this title as long as you are ro working royal. She gave them the title knowing that anything could happen. That is their name. They are entitled to use that to make money. That if they start, you know, getting it's all it's actually about taxpayer funding. It's about whether or not you're a public representative. That is the thing that matters. The name is really irrelevant. You know, any I could call myself Jessica Mountbatten Windsor and start selling books, and I'd be allowed to do that.
I remember when they first named Archie, and everyone was like, why aren't they calling him Archie Sussex? Like, why are they going for Mountbatten Windsor? That's such a mouthful, honestly. So annoying. And like, there were so many like Twitter accounts and Tumblr blogs that were called like Archie Sussex, because that was what everyone assumed he was gonna go by. So I feel like I'm living in some kind of weird Twilight Zone where that just didn't happen and everyone's forgotten that was what we expected to happen in the first place.
So I've got a little summary, which is essentially, I think, that's, you can correct me if I've got any of this wrong, but generally, the general thing is that royals, most of them, not all of them, but most of them don't legally have a surname, even in some countries where a surname is a legal requirement, like Sweden. But in some families, they have done various things like issuing statements and decrees saying what surnames can be used. Usually, those surnames are based on the name of the house, but they aren't always, or they can be adapted. So you might like chuck the father's last name in there, like the Mountbatten Windsors or the Van Amsbergs in the Netherlands. So you might chuck something in to differentiate. But it only really becomes important to about what their last name is or isn't when you get into sort of the hangers-on, the extended family, the ones who aren't working royals. And I do think that the question of the use of a royal surname will start to become important for some monarchies in the future, but to be honest, it's not really the top of my list in terms of like, you know, what's going to make or break a monarchy, what last name they use, you know. My summary.
I just like the concept of someone be like, I'm not having a monarchy anymore. Their
Yeah.
last name is Mountbatten Windsor. It's disgusting. Not dealing with that. That is all we have got for this week. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into surnames and houses of European royal families. And if you have got any ideas on anything exciting we can do for our 100th episode, which is coming up at some point soon, let us know and we may use it if it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But until we return, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.